This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President-elect Donald Trump is doubling down on his criticism of the CIA. He tweeted today, quote, "Can you imagine if the election results were the opposite and we tried to play the Russia CIA card? It would be called conspiracy theory." Well, Trump is referring to Friday's Washington Post report that a CIA analysis concludes that Russia not only tried to undermine the U.S. election, but that it acted to give Trump the advantage. Here's Trump's reaction to that report. He was on Fox News Sunday.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's just another excuse. I don't believe it. I don't know why.
The New York Times says Trump's reaction has created, quote, an extraordinary breach between the president-elect and the national security establishment. And it comes as Trump is poised to name more members of the cabinet to key intelligence and diplomatic posts. Well, joining us now with some analysis is retired Admiral James Stavridis. He's dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He served as former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in Europe from 2009 to 2013. He was also vetted to be Hillary Clinton's running mate and was reported to be Donald Trump's shortlist or on Donald Trump's shortlist for Secretary of State. Stavridis met with the president-elect last Thursday, but he joins us now. Admiral Stavridis, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna. How are you?
I'm doing well. These are heady times here. So first of all, let me ask you, are you concerned when you hear the president-elect reject the CIA's analysis, call it ridiculous, and say that he doesn't believe it, even though he may not know why?
I am concerned. I do think we need to recognize that this is based on leaks at this point in terms of the material that supposedly is in the CIA report. But even stepping back and looking at reports which have been verified about the WikiLeaks from the material at the DNC, which were done by Russia, this is not ridiculous. It's not laughable, as Kellyanne Conway said earlier today. And it's a serious matter. And that's why you hear Congress on both sides of the aisle very concerned and calling for an independent investigation. I support that.
You do support that, okay, because the Obama administration is saying that it's launching an investigation. We don't yet know if Congress is actually going to act. As you said, there are calls from both sides of the aisle. I mean, if indeed a congressional investigation is launched, what kind of timeline would you like to see it follow?
I think it has to be fast enough to give us confidence that we can respond if we discover that Russia has in fact intruded in our elections. That's hyper important. And indeed, if you these are two separate investigations. The executive branch one we know will be done by the time President Obama leaves office. The congressional one I think will take longer, will probably be more thorough, but still needs to be done with alacrity because we are going to need to respond to Russia if we discover that they did in fact interfere deliberately in our election process, the heart of our democracy.
So, I mean, I know that this is all speculation as of yet because we don't have any results from any kind of report so far or investigation, but you used the word the necessity to respond there a couple of times. What might a response be?
Well, I think first and foremost, it would need to be proportional. In other words, what we have suffered here is a cyber attack that was directed at our electoral system. So what we would not do, for example, Meghna, is attack the Russian electrical grid in the cyber sense. I think we would need to tailor our response so it was proportional and in roughly the same zone. So I'll give you two examples of things that perhaps could be considered. One would be doing something that exposes overseas financial accounts of Russian leaders. This would be embarrassing to them. It would be in roughly the same space that we're talking about, and it would, I think, have a domestic impact in the same sense that these actions perhaps have had domestic impact here. A second idea would be to use our cyber system to then penetrate and expose the way Russia is using its cyber internally in Russia to suppress dissidents. So those are two thoughts. There are other ways to respond. You could also do things clandestinely and not do them in a public way. There's a variety of options that will hit the table, but of course, ironically, all of these options in this conversation will be occurring under the Trump administration.
Right.
So we have to wait and see what President Trump does. Today he's President-elect Trump, maybe confronted with more evidence and after time and spending more time around the intelligence community, he'll have more confidence and want to take this on, because it is, in my view, a very serious challenge from Russia.
It is, to me, it sounds like you're describing that we may be on the brink of a 21st century refreezing, yet another intense Cold War.
Well, let's hope not, because it's in no one's interest to kind of stumble backwards into another Cold War. What we need to do with Russia is find zones of cooperation, and there are places we can cooperate with Russia. For example, in counter-narcotics, counter-piracy, counter-terrorism, in the Arctic, perhaps in arms control. But there are going to be places where we'll need to confront Russia when their behavior is simply unacceptable, and the three obvious examples of that are their support for the dictator Assad in Syria, the cyber attacks that appear to have been directed at our electoral process, and above all, the annexation of Crimea, direct violation of international law. So confront where we must, but cooperate wherever we can, keep communication open, and hopefully we can reestablish an equilibrium in our relations with Russia.
Well, Admiral Stavridis, let me ask you then, given everything that you just said, certainly no matter how the U.S. moves forward, and as you point out, it will be under a Trump administration, he ostensibly would be taking advice from the national security establishment. And we have folks already over the weekend like Michael Hayden, who was NSA director and later director of the CIA under President George W. Bush, quoted in the New York Times as saying, quote, "To have the president-elect of the United States simply reject the fact-based narrative that the intelligence community puts together because it conflicts with his a priori assumptions. Wow," says Michael Hayden. I mean, is this a breach that it could be endanger American national security?
Well, I know General Hayden very well, and I have enormous respect for him. I think his comments speak for themselves. What I would add to it is we're still relatively early in the investigative process before we draw sweeping conclusions. I think we should give President-elect Trump time to get to know the intelligence community better. He's never worked with the intelligence community. He has zero political background. It's not a part of the government he's touched in any way. So let's give him some space to understand and work with it. But at some point, I think he has to trust his intelligence community. There's no way we can have a functioning executive branch with a breakdown of trust between a president and the intelligence community. So I think we're off to a rocky start, but he's not even the president yet. Let's give it a little bit of time. Let's have Congress do an independent investigation. Let's see where the current administration investigation lands. We'll know more in 60 days.
Well, Admiral, I want to just play a little bit of tape here for you. Again, it's from the president-elect. He was on Fox News Sunday, and you were talking about forming trust with the intelligence services. He also communicated that he may not actually have that much interest in what they have to say on a day-to-day basis because he's not receiving their daily briefings. He's taking them about once a week. Here's what he said.
I don't have to be told, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day for the next 8 years. Could be 8 years, but 8 years. I don't need that. But I do say, if something should change, let us know.
Admiral Stavridis, just react to that.
Well, I took daily intelligence briefings as the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO at roughly the level that the president saw. And I think what's important about intelligence, Meghna, is that it's not a snapshot. That's not what's helpful. It's a movie. It keeps progressing and changing. So I think it is important to be in a conversational flow with your briefer on a daily basis. Now, an alternative is that some people do better when they read than when they're being briefed. So there are different techniques for absorbing that information, but I think it's crucial for any senior leader in the security business, to include the president, receive information on a daily basis. And just getting an occasional snapshot is not the same as watching the movie every single day.
Admiral, if I may ask, you met with the president-elect on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
you met him at Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. Did you get the sense that he was taking his responsibility here regarding U.S. national security seriously?
Well, what I can say is I was with him for about 50 minutes. It was a collegial conversation. It was described to me as a chance to provide my views on international and security issues, and that's really what transpired. He asked a long series of questions about North Korea, cybersecurity, Russia, China. It was a very serious conversation, and I think I had an opportunity to present my views, and in two particular areas, NATO, which I strongly support, and cybersecurity, where I think we need to strengthen ourselves, he was particularly engaged. So it was a good conversation, and it was indicative of a president-elect taking his new role seriously, in my view.
Hmm. Let me just play a little bit of tape from, this is actually you speaking in March on Fox News following one of the Republican debates, and here's what you said.
I was struck by the lack of acuity in Mr. Trump's comments. I think he does not seem to have a grasp of the issues that are facing the nation.
Perhaps you already answered this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Has your opinion changed since March?
I think it's too soon for my opinion to have changed. The issues I was speaking about in that interview include building a wall with Mexico. I think that's a bad idea. Withdrawing or reducing our influence in NATO. I think that's a bad idea. Considering nuclear weapons technology for Japan, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, I think that's a bad idea. Developing a particularly warm relationship with Russia, I think that's a bad idea. So I think it's too soon to say whether my opinions on that spectrum of issues have really changed. I will say one encouraging thing, if you will, is that earlier I would have added to the list his comments that he would bring back waterboarding and torture. However, following a conversation with General Jim Mattis, whom I know extremely well, who's the Secretary of Defense designee, President-elect Trump has walked back from that. Mm. So we should give him time and the benefit of listening to advisors and hope that these opinions will shift as we go forward.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with retired Admiral James Stavridis. He's Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He also served as Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in Europe from 2009 to 2013. And as you just heard, he met just last Thursday with President-elect Donald Trump. Admiral Stavridis, so let's talk about NATO a little bit, because, of course, during the election, Donald Trump was highly critical of NATO and basically yes. questioned, the efficacy of NATO's larger mission today. I mean, what did you talk to him about? What did you tell him about, especially given the fact that Russia is overshadowing not only this conversation, but so much of what has happened in the United States national politics in the past couple of weeks?
Magna, I talked to him and tried to make a business case for NATO. And I think individuals who go into brief the president-elect or eventually the president would be well served to consider his background. So I tried to make the point that the U.S. spends $600 billion a year on defense, which is quite a bit of money. Russia spends about only $80 billion on defense. China spends only $140 billion on defense. Here's the point. Europe spends $300 billion on defense. They are contributing. They are not freeloading. The European defense budget outstrips China and Russia combined. So the point I tried to make with the president-elect was this is pretty good value for the money. We could press them to spend a little bit more. That would enable us to spend a little bit less. That would be a good thing. But as a business case, we wouldn't want to walk away from an organization providing the second largest defense budget in the world after ours. Mm-hmm. So that was the type of conversation I had with him.
Did he seem receptive to that argument?
He did, actually. And he, I think, will take my thoughts into account as he goes forward. And I am hopeful that as others approach him with other good points, similar things will occur.
Mm. Now, given that, there's also been news that Donald Trump may be considering Rex Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil, for the post of Secretary of State. Mm. Now, in 2012, Vladimir Putin bestowed Russia's Order of Friendship on Tillerson, and Exxon has executed some very high-level drilling deals with Russia, particularly in the Arctic, sometimes at odds with, you know, American interests. So it seems as if the president-elect is looking at folks who have certain ties, relationships with Russia that may actually be at odds with what you were describing in terms of the importance of, say, NATO and American foreign policy.
I think on Mr. Tillerson, it's kind of a mixed picture. I think in principle, the idea of having a global business leader, someone who knows all of the senior people around the world, who has been very engaged in the economics of the world, has run a big complex organization, I think there's merit in that as an idea, as a model for the Secretary of State position. I think the connections, the evidently extremely strong connections that he has through ExxonMobil with Russia are something that need to be examined in some depth, and that's why, in the end, Congress has to confirm his appointment, and I suspect that will be a subject of some scrutiny as he comes forward, and I think you have to go through that process and make sure that he is the kind of individual who can operate independent of previous connections.
Right.
That'll be a decision the Senate will make.
Well, finally, Admiral Stavridis, I've been listening carefully to all that you've been saying in this conversation. I'm very grateful that you're joining us today, because it seems as if so much is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard you say that, yes, you agree with the call for a congressional investigation into Russia's actions regarding the election. I've heard you say, giving us the broad strokes of the discussion you had with President-elect Trump. I feel like everyone's on edge right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the president-elect needs to do in order to assure you and the American people that when it comes to American foreign policy, he's got the country on the right foot?
I think three things come to mind. First, listen to many, many voices, and that includes both the people you're selecting for your cabinet, which he has every right to do and every responsibility to do, but listen to voices who are not part of that cabinet and perhaps have been involved in a wide variety of discussions. I think the second thing is be measured and thoughtful in what you say. Foreign policy is complex and difficult, and it doesn't do well when it's the subject of rapid-fire tweets. I'm not sure that's a good approach to take, at least at this stage of things. And then thirdly, be accessible and let people know your views. Continue to give interviews, continue to talk about foreign policy. And I think the American public don't expect a president to have the answer to everything, but they expect a president who will listen, who will take his time or her time, and will, in the end, make the right decision for the country.
Well, Admiral James Stavridis is Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He served as Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in Europe from 2009 to 2013. Admiral Stavridis, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Meghna.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.